Hello again, my name is Steve Elzinga, and for the next three sessions we're going to be looking at some of the causes for the need for coaching. My first question is, when did you first hear about coaching? My guess is it wasn't that long ago. Coaching is a relatively new phenomena. It's not in the sporting world, okay? The whole concept of what a coach is, you know, sort of comes from the sports world. If you're on a professional soccer or football team, basketball or baseball, whatever it is, generally there is a coach. You have the players, but you need a coach, someone that organizes the players. If you just had the players would end up fighting about what position, who plays, and who has to sit on the bench, and who gets to play, and what positions they play, and what strategy we're going to do, and you know how we're going to practice, and you know all the management kind of activities. So there's this need for a person who's not playing to sort of step in and say, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to practice. This is how we're going to identify who plays where and when. So the whole coaching thing is sort of originated out of the sporting world. But then over the last, I would say, maybe 20 years, the whole concept of coaching has sort of shifted from just the sporting thing to the business world. And they were called consultants. So you had a business, and then you want to talk to some expert in the field that you're trying to do something in, someone who has a lot of experience, and they come in and they teach you about all the things that they've done and what they see that works, and they try to help you improve your game, improve whatever business that you're doing. We called them consultants. But over time, and consultants, it was sort of the Wild West of consulting. A consultant could encourage, a consultant could teach, could give a whole program of activity, could just listen, could evaluate and then leave, could manage. I mean, it was a whole bunch of things. But over time, this whole concept of coaching, which is more of a limited thing. It's not a coming in there and teaching about how to do something. It's really about helping people do what they already want to do. And they just can't seem to do it. And that has really developed over the last maybe 10, 15 years. And it's really, I would say, over the last couple of years that everyone's talking about it. And it sort of has trickled down to the whole church world as well, the Christian ministry world, where people are now becoming Christian life coaches. There's life coaches, there's business coaches, there's personal training, exercise coaches, there's diet coaches. Every topic you can think of, there's a coach to help you succeed at whatever it is. Now, the question that I have for us here today is, why? I mean, 100 years ago, we didn't have coaches, and people went out and did things and accomplished things and had, families and raised kids and started businesses, and churches were developed and expanded all over the world, the great missionary movements. Okay, there were no coaches. So why now? Why is this a thing? Why is this becoming more and more people are interested? If you're taking this class, somehow you got introduced to this whole idea of coaching and you heard it enough times that you decided, hey, maybe I should do something about it. And, oh, I see there's a class on it at Christian Leaders Institute. I think I'll take that. So here you are trying to figure it out. Why? Why did this thing even come to you? What has happened in our culture that makes coaching more of a necessity than it was in the past? I'm going to talk about several things, but the one thing I want to talk about in this lecture is the rise of the someone should do it for me culture. The rise of the someone should do it for me culture. What I mean by that is okay, I'm trying to do something, and then I run into an obstacle, and I don't power through the obstacle. I don't, you know, push it down or go around it. I wait for someone to do something about it. Why is there this obstacle? You know, the government should change this, or the community should change this, or the pastor should change this, or my parents should change this, or my business, my boss, the company should change this. So it's always looking for someone else to fix the problem. Someone should do it for me. There's a problem, there's a frustration in my life, and I can't do anything about it, so someone else should. And I'm saying that this is becoming more and more a way that people think, that someone should do it for me. I want to look at just three sort of basic examples: socialism versus capitalism, number two, Sunday school movement, and then the church, just to give you a little flavor, a little idea of sort of how this has happened. Okay, the first one, it's a little complicated, but socialism versus capitalism. Number one, capitalism. What is capitalism? Capitalism is opportunity plus responsibility equals success. Okay? Opportunity plus responsibility equals success. So at Christian Leaders Institute, we believe in that. We believe in giving you an opportunity. We believe in giving every person that wants to learn a chance to learn. If you can get connected to the internet, it doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter how much money you have or whether you were raised in the right environment, had the right parents, or in the right social status. We don't care about any of that. Equal opportunity for all. We are giving everyone the opportunity. But the only way that you're going to succeed at this opportunity is to take responsibility. If you don't take responsibility, nothing's going to happen. And if you've already taken a few classes here at Christian Leaders Institute, then you know that. You know, the course is there. The lectures are there. The quizzes are there. But I can't come and force you to do it. I can't even go over there and encourage you to do it. You have to take responsibility for what is going to happen. Okay, now this doesn't sound like the someone should do it for me culture, right? This is you should do something culture. It's up to you. And that is part of capitalism. But I'm going to look in a minute, we're going to look at socialism, then we'll come back to capitalism, because capitalism has also led to some of the someone should do it for me culture. You wouldn't think it, because it has responsibility right there, but it has. Okay, socialism. Socialism is provision, in other words, something is provided, plus equality is equal success. So the goal really is both are trying to succeed, but the way to do it is to provide for people to make things equal. Capitalism makes things unequal because someone works really hard and they get twice as much done as someone who works not as hard. You know, Paul, one of his lines to one of the churches was, if you don't work, you don't eat. If you work, you eat. If you work really hard, you eat really well. If you don't do anything, then you starve. Okay? Well, as humans, we don't like that. It's like, well, you know, some people are getting rich and they're getting powerful and they have everything. And then other people, they don't have all the, you know, opportunities that some have, and they're struggling and they're suffering and their innocent children are suffering. So we should do something about it. We should provide. We got to figure out how to balance. So we have these two systems that keep fighting with one another, and we keep fighting with it. I mean, here in our country, we were started as a capitalist nation, you know, that we were founded on those kind of principles. But in our political world right now, we talk about socialism. You would think, why are we even talking about it? But we do, because human beings see the suffering of the inequity of things, how some people are hurting and some people aren't. Some people have way more than they need, and some people have less, you know, than what they need. It's like it feels wrong somehow. You know, when we get to heaven, is it going to be a capitalist system where some people have more gold, paved streets in front of their house? Or are we all going to have enough to eat? So it's like, how does this go? And so, but you can see the socialist, mentality is that everyone needs to be equal, and the only way to do that is to provide for people. But if that becomes sort of the symbol of how we do things, then you can see where this idea is someone should do it for me becomes the mentality. And the more this mentality, that people have, that someone should do it for me, the less they take ownership for things. And because people don't take ownership, they can't get anything done. They can't succeed at anything. Because the first obstacle that they hit, they stop and blame and say, someone should take care of this for me. It's hard to succeed at anything if every time you run into an obstacle, you think someone else should remove it. And so people need coaches to come alongside to help them get over that. Right? Because you can't have this mentality that someone should do it for you. Or you'll be waiting your whole life for someone to do it for you. So a coach is needed now to sort of combat that idea that someone should do it for me. By the way, the whole, the problem with trying to make everything equal is it's almost impossible to do. Because the very thing that you use to fix something often causes another problem. So I just listened to a report about how in the 60s in the United States, before the social network was, social system was really developed, that 25% of homes in poor families, the father is absent. The father left. And then, so now you have a single mother trying to raise children. So a safety net was provided. Different programs came in to try to help that single mother deal with trying to live, raise children on her own. Well, I just heard a report the other day that said, even though we've tried to fix that problem, we now have 75%. Of poor families without a father. So to try to fix a problem, all we've done is incentivize, because now it's easier for a single mother to do this because there's more resources, so fathers don't feel responsible. And so they leave because there's a safety net to take care of them. So the very thing that we use to fix something is the very thing that causes the problem. And again, this whole idea of trying to fix all these things, and what does it do? It gives people the sense that someone should fix this. Someone out there should fix all these problems. Now, I said that capitalism can do the same thing. Capitalism has led to a sense of inadequacy. Capitalism, Adam Smith, back in the 1800s, wrote a book entitled The Wealth of Nations, and he's called the father of capitalism. And in that book, he outlines how wealth can be accumulated in a nation. And he basically said that before we had sort of a farming, world. And on the farm, the farmer does everything. He has to be a mechanic. He has to be good with animals. He has to be good with the fields, and he has to know a little bit of. He's got a weld. He does everything, and he manages. He does the accounting, but he's not specifically good at any of it. And what the Industrial Revolution did is you break things into its parts. So if you're going to build a car, you break it into sort of the assembly line. And one person does one thing. And when they do one thing, they do it really well. And because they do it really well, they get really fast. And because they're fast, the price goes down with the product that they make. And because the price goes down, more people buy it. Because more people buy it, you can do a bigger scale. A bigger scale, you can get it done cheaper. The cheaper it gets, the more people buy it. And it becomes this revolving door, and wealth is created. Okay? So that's worked really well in the industrial world. It's really, made our modern world. It's why things are so inexpensive as they are. And why you can be listening to this, we have smartphones, we have all these things, because of this revolution. So it's worked really well with business. But it hasn't worked so well with other arenas of life. It hasn't worked so well with parenting, for example. Now, a parent is sort of like the farmer. He has to do all of it. There's educating, there's teaching, there's training, there's, you know, when they're little, and they, you know, all the different stages of parenting. And but what's happened is the Industrial Revolution has, the capitalism idea has come to parenting. So why should you teach your kid anything? You, as a parent, you don't know. You're not an expert teacher, are you? So send them to a teacher. Send them to, your kid wants to learn how to swim, send them to someone that can teach him how to swim. Your child needs to learn how to play a sport, you send them to the coach, he'll help your, you know. So what we've done is we've jobbed out the parenting role to all these experts, these people who have focused on one thing. The problem is, what we've lost is the parent-child connection. See, back before when a child was raised on the farm and the father had to teach a son everything, there's a connection, there's an excuse for father and son to always be together. Father and son to talk about life, to a son to observe the father and see what he does and learn. So there's a relationship. There's an excuse to form a relationship. So when the father shares his heart and the father shares about God, you know, there's a relationship, there's something there. Okay? The modern father hasn't spent any time with his son. He's jobbed out his son to learn all these things from all these other people. So now when the father wants to say something important, son, I really want to tell you the secret of life is to walk with God. Well, Dad, you haven't taught me anything my whole life. What kind of relationship do we have? I don't even know who you are. You know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's sort of what's happened. And because of the Industrial Revolution, we all feel inadequate in most of life. We feel really good in the one thing that we know how to do. But in the rest of life, we feel inadequate. And because we feel inadequate, we can't get things done. So again, that's the need for coaching. A coach comes and says, maybe you can do something. Maybe you can spend time with your son. Maybe it's more important that you teach your kid how to swim poorly than and develop a relationship than to have some expert teach your son how to swim well. But it's in the coaching process that you can find out, you know, what's really going on in your life. I think people are just on autopilot and we don't know what to do. I think because of all these things, people don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with their children. They don't know what to do in their marriages. They don't know what to do with their business. They don't know whether they should take education. Here you are taking Christian Leaders Institute. You don't know what to do either. You're like, should I work in the church? Should I quit my job? Should I be a tent maker? What can I do? How can I do this? I think you're not alone. I think everyone is like, because we don't know what our role is. We don't know what we should be doing. We have this conflict between the capitalist and the socialist systems. And we don't know how to figure it out. And so we need someone to sort of cut through all of that and help us. You know, I need someone to come into my life and say, what's important to you? Where are you hurting? What would you like to, you know, most work on in your life? And then someone to help me do that. The Sunday school movement. Okay, in the United States, the Sunday school movement happened, you know, some 100 or so years ago. If you go into the rural areas of the United States, you will see churches, and they all look like one big box with a steeple on it. There's no educational wing, because 100 or 150 years ago, there was no Sunday school. There were no classes. The responsibility of teaching the Bible and teaching the doctrines of the church was not the responsibility of the church staff. It's the responsibility of the parents. Sunday school started as a movement to reach the kids of parents who didn't go to church. So, you know, how are these kids going to learn about Jesus? How are they going to learn about the Bible if we don't do something? So people came up with this idea of Sunday school. Let's have Sunday school. This is an educational process for the kids whose parents don't go to church. Now, some of the church fathers way back then said, whoa, let's be careful with this. And the people said, well, why? I mean, it seems like a good idea. And these wise church fathers said, okay, but this is what we think might happen. If we start doing Sunday school for the kids of parents who don't go to church, eventually that Sunday school will be used for the children of the parents who do go to church. And if that happens, the parents will stop taking ownership for the spiritual direction of their children. And that's exactly what happened. From Ernest Trice Thompson, Presbyterians in the South, Volume 1. In the early days, what we now term religious education was primarily a function of the home. Parents were expected to train their children in the knowledge of the scriptures and also of the doctrines. It was the pastor's responsibility to see that this duty was not neglected. Okay? So what has happened with this Sunday school thing? What has happened in the church? Someone should do it for me. I mean, parents had the responsibility. It's the responsibility of the parents to teach the Bible and to teach the doctrines. It's the responsibility of the church to make sure that they do it. But what's happened? Over time, people say, no, someone should do it for me. Why should I do this? I'm not an expert. Let's let an expert do it for me. So again, that mentality of someone should do it for me. And so if you have that mentality, again, it's hard to get anything done. Okay, one more example, the church. In general, it's not only just Sunday school where this has happened, where the education of the children is now in the hands of the church. It's almost everything. Worship is now in the hands of the professionals who do it on Sunday morning. My father-in-law was a farmer, and he loved singing the hymns. They had a piano. They would sing a couple of hymns every day. He'd be singing the hymns in the barn. When the uncles and aunts came over for 20 minutes or so, they'd all gather around the piano and sing some hymns. Now, people don't sing. They don't sing the hymns together. No one says, hey, let's sing for a while. It's all done on Sunday morning, and it's done by people who have been practicing and figured it all out. And we go, and if you look at the modern church today, half the people aren't even singing. Why? Because someone is doing it for them. Let's have them do the worship for them. My father-in-law, farmer, simple farmer, he had Calvin's Institutes sitting by his bedside. This is tough doctrine reading. He would read those at night before he went to bed. But today, people are like, that's what we pay pastors for. Let's let the pastors study the Word of God. Let them figure out what it all means. And then on Sunday, I will come and just listen to them. I'll let the professionals do it for me. And so what has happened? So churches are filled now with people who sit back and are letting other people do the spiritual things for them. And what is the result of that? Unhappiness. I mean, if my only role is to come and sit back and listen to you, what am I going to do? I'm going to be critical. Last week, Pastor, you really did a great job. You hit it out of the park. It was a great sermon, really effective. But this week, it was kind of lame. I hope next week is better. See, I'm not involved. I'm not doing anything. I'm not taking ownership. I'm not reading the Bible. I'm not studying what it says. I'm not trying to figure out how it applies to life. I'm just sitting back and letting you do it. So, just an aside, in our church, we're trying not to do that. I have a little book that I write for every sermon series, and every day there's things to read, questions to answer, and then on Sunday I preach out of it. I don't want to be the one who does it for you, because I don't want the people in my church to get this mentality that someone should do it for me. So what am I saying? I'm saying that with the example of capitalism, socialism, the example of Sunday school, the example of church, what I'm saying is because of this attitude, this pervasive attitude that's growing, I think, around the world, that somebody should do it for me, people's lives are broken, people aren't accomplishing things, they're frustrated in their marriages, frustrated in their parenting, frustrated in leading in business, frustrated in leading in church. Because people are sitting around waiting for someone to fix it all. Waiting for someone to swoop in and change things. And so we elect people, we unelect people. Some countries, they have a coup, they kick that government out, they bring in a new government, and it's the same old thing over and over. Because people aren't taking ownership. And so some people are now discovering that with a coach, a coach can help you get over that mentality. You don't sit around and wait for someone else to do it for you. You do it. You can do it. And that's what the coaching relationship enables people to actually accomplish things and go after things instead of sitting back.